Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press, Religion News Service, and National Public Radio. First of all, an article from the Associated Press on June the 20th, entitled "Cross Bequeathed by Pope Benedict XVI is Stolen from Church in His Home Region in Germany, Berlin." A cross bequeathed by the late Pope Benedict XVI to a parish in his German home region of Bavaria has been stolen from the church where it was exhibited, police said on June 20. A display case on the wall of the town church in Traunstein was broken open by unknown perpetrators, and the cross was taken sometime between 11:45 a.m. and 5 p.m. on June 19, Bavaria's state criminal police office said. The cross was described as a pectoral cross, one worn on the chest. Police said that cash also was stolen from the till of a magazine stand in the church. For the Catholic Church, the value of the religious object is not quantifiable, the police statement said. It called for people who may have seen suspicious individuals around the church on June 19 or can give any information to come forward. Benedict died on December 31, nearly a decade after becoming the first pope in six centuries to resign. The missing cross is one of several of its kind, Munich Archdiocese spokesman Christoph Kappi said. It was sent to Traunstein after Benedict resigned and went on display at the location it was stolen from in 2020, he told German news agency DPA. The former Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger was born in the small Bavarian town of Marktl am Inn, but his father moved the family to Traunstein when Joseph was two. He studied for the priesthood at a seminary there. An article from the Religion News Service published on June 19th, entitled "William Barber Departs Pulpit of Greenleaf Church with an Ode to the Power of Disability," by Yonat Shimron, Raleigh, North Carolina. For his final sermon as pastor of Greenleaf Christian Church in Goldsboro, North Carolina, on June 18th, the Reverend William Barber II spoke of the testimony of the cripple. The sermon, which capped his 30-year tenure as pastor of Disciples of Christ Church in the mostly black town, about 50 miles southeast of Raleigh, the state capital, was unusually personal. Barber, whom some consider a successor to the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. for his anti-poverty activism, will devote his time to training future pastors. Late last year, he was appointed founding director of the Center for Public Theology and Public Policy at Yale Divinity School. In completing his tenure at Greenleaf, Barber, 59, spoke of the struggle that nearly ended his career before it began. In 1993, the year he was called to lead the church, he was diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis. Though he didn't name the condition, which causes the vertebrae of the spine to fuse together and has resulted in a hunched back and a halting gait, he spoke candidly of the depression and near loss of faith that came with his diagnosis and the ways it forced him to lean more heavily on God. I had an officer in the Christian church, the national church, call me and say, "Barber, you're probably going to need to find out another thing to do besides pastoring, because the church ain't going to want a cripple to be a pastor," he recounted. At a time when muscular Christianity, a militant, almost warrior-like faith, appears ascendant in many Christian and political spaces, Barber, who walks with a cane, has staked his life on speaking for the weak and lowly. "We work so hard to present how strong we are, and we think that's faith," Barber said. But he added, "God's grace and God's glory is more evident when we are weak." "So if you're going to boast about your faith," he intoned, "don't tell everybody how good you are. Tell them how you've fallen." Using the prophet Isaiah's image of a bruised reed and the story of a lame man named Mephibosheth from the book of Samuel, Barber spoke for 45 minutes about his own struggle and about those of other biblical figures, such as Job, the prophet Jeremiah, the apostle Paul, and many others who were either physically or psychologically afflicted. Sitting behind him was Terry Horde Owens, general minister and president of the Disciples of Christ, as well as Sharon Watkins, her predecessor, and the first woman to lead a mainline denomination in 2005. Barber, who also served as president of the North Carolina State Conference of the NAACP from 2005 until 2017, is best known in the state for organizing the Moral Mondays movement as a protest against cuts to unemployment benefits, health care funding, voting rights, and environmental regulations. The movement was credited with helping defeat former Republican Governor Pat McCrory in 2016. Barber's dedication to low-income Americans and their concerns raised his profile nationally and led to speeches at the Democratic National Convention and later a MacArthur Genius Grant. Most recently, Tennessee State Representative Justin Jones, who was expelled by the overwhelmingly white Republican-controlled state legislature and then reinstated, credited Barber as a sort of godfather to him. In a phone call with Religion News Service after the service, Barber said he was especially proud to hand over leadership of his church to a woman, the Reverend G. Cheryl Hinnant Uzell, who was named his successor at Greenleaf. Hinnant Uzell has served as assistant pastor at the church for several years. Barber has also handed the leadership of another organization he founded, Repairers of the Breach, to a woman, the Reverend A. Casimir Brown. Barber will retain the title of president and senior lecturer. Immediately after his last service, Barber headed to Washington for a three-day Poor People's Campaign event to raise awareness of poverty, which he said is the fourth leading cause of death in the United States. As part of that event, he's scheduled to have a meeting in the White House on June 14. Barber said he will always keep a home in the South, even as he intends to spend most of his time at Yale and New Haven, Connecticut, beginning this fall. He felt it was important to leave Greenleaf with a message that hardship can be a source of strength, or, as he put it, your crippleness doesn't disqualify you. Your crippleness gives God a place to show God's strength, and it also enables you to be in community, because you cannot do it on your own. An article from Religion News Service that was published on June 14, entitled Southern Baptists Start Constitutional Step Naming Only Men as Pastors, by Adele M. Banks. Southern Baptists, after lengthy debate on June 14, voted on new language for their constitution that would state only men can be pastors of the nation's largest Protestant denomination. The wording, which must be approved 2 years in a row, would be added to an article of the Constitution that describes ways that churches can be in friendly cooperation with the Southern Baptist Convention, which the current Constitution defines as churches that agree with the SBC's statement of faith, contribute to its funding program or entities, do not discriminate on the basis of ethnicity, and do not condone sexual abuse. The new language would add that a church affirms, appoints, or employs only men as any kind of pastor or elder as qualified by Scripture. At the 2022 annual meeting, Virginia pastor Mike Law recommended an amendment that would only allow churches to cooperate with the SBC if they do not affirm, appoint, or employ a woman as a pastor of any kind. He spoke to his intent at a microphone at New Orleans' Ernest N. Morial Convention Center on the second day of the two-day annual meeting. Law, pastor of Arlington Baptist Church, described being in an area with a small percentage of evangelical Christians when he spoke on the floor of the convention. Over a year ago, I realized that five Southern Baptist churches within a five-mile radius of my congregation had women serving as pastors, including senior pastors, he said. When an unbeliever looks for a Southern Baptist church in any area, we want them to find a church that holds the Bible's teachings and our convention's beliefs. Juan Sanchez, senior pastor of High Point Baptist Church in Austin, Texas, introduced a substitute motion with language that focused on men instead of women. This motion states what we believe positively. We agree that both men and women are gifted for service in the church, he said. Women are a gift to the church, and we affirm their vital roles in the ministry of the church and church staffs. The SBC Executive Committee voted on June 12 to approve placing the amendment before the messengers or delegates during this year's meeting. But they also noted their opposition to changing the Constitution to address the issue, with some members saying during the meeting that the faith statement is the place for such doctrinal issues. While the messengers to the 2022 SBC annual meeting entrusted the executive committee with this motion, we recognize the significance of the matter at this given time and therefore believe it is prudent to place the referred motion before the entire body of messengers, the committee stated, while also expressing our opposition to the suggested amendment to SBC Constitution Article 3. The Baptist faith and message states, while both men and women are gifted for service in the church, the office of pastor is limited to men as qualified by Scripture. Baptists have differed over whether that faith statement currently refers to barring women from all pastoral roles or only from serving in the role of senior pastor. Law, pastor of Arlington Baptist Church, has compiled a list of 170 women serving in pastoral roles. Fewer than a third are senior pastors. The remainder include associate pastors and children's pastors. Baptists were divided on June 14 about whether the amendment was necessary or would cast a poor reflection on the ministry work of its women members. Sarah Clatworthy, whose husband is a pastor in San Angelo, Texas, affirmed the need for an amendment and viewed it as a way to keep feminism and liberalism outside the conservative denomination. For those churches who have women serving under the title of pastor in any capacity, the Constitution should encourage them to change those titles rather than allowing their titles to dictate what the Constitution says, she said. Let those who affirm women and pastoral leadership attend the United Methodist Convention, where they will be welcomed with open arms. We should leave no room for our daughters and granddaughters in the generation ahead to have confusion on where the SBC stands. Bob Bender, pastor emeritus of Cross Fellowship Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado, implored his fellow Baptists to not fight amongst themselves when they all share conservative beliefs. Regarding women in ministry and associate roles, should not title and function be synonymous? Let's not give women responsibilities to shepherd other women and children and youth and not have their title line up with their responsibilities. That's being disingenuous and in business could be litigious. He also expressed concern about how the convention looks to non-Southern Baptist. If we do this, do we really want 100 churches appealing being dismissed with 3 minutes each at next year's convention? He asked. What does it say when we seem to be slow on the take in addressing the sexual abuses of women, but fast on the draw to disqualify them from non-pastoral roles? The issue of women pastors figured in the debates on the first day of the meeting with representatives of two churches with women pastors. given 3 minutes to ask for reinstatement in the denomination. On the second day, the Baptist affirmed the executive committee's decision to oust those churches. Rick Warren, founder of Saddleback Church, urged the reinstatement of his Southern California congregation on June 13. The megachurch had given Stacy Wood, wife of Andy Wood, who replaced Warren as lead pastor last summer, the title of teaching pastor. The church previously ordained 3 women who were long-term staffers on Mother's Day weekend in 2021. And in May, Katie Edwards was announced as the new campus pastor of the church's Lake Forest, California location. The Reverend Linda Barnes Popham, pastor of Fern Creek Baptist Church in Louisville, Kentucky, likewise appealed the ouster of her church because she holds its pulpit. While Warren and Popham considered the issue one over which Baptists could disagree and remain together, R. Albert Moeller, Jr., president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, rebutted their views by saying women pastors violate SBC doctrine. Now an article from the Religion News Service published on June 15, entitled Pope Francis' Message for Peace Now Orbits the Earth, to be heard across all borders, by Claire Giangrave, Vatican City. Pope Francis' message for unity and peace can now be heard from space after a satellite containing a nanobook of his teachings was launched into the Earth's orbit on June 10 to create new ways to show and promote the seed of hope, according to a Vatican statement. The satellite hitched a ride aboard SpaceX's Falcon 9 rocket launching from the Vandenberg Space Force Base in California, after being blessed by Pope Francis on March 29 at his general audience in St. Peter's Square. The Space Satellite's mission, the Latin words for satellite of hope, was inspired by this papacy's most memorable moment during the pandemic, when Pope Francis stepped out into an empty St. Peter's Square on a rainy evening in late March 2020 to issue a message of unity as the world began to grapple with the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. If that evening Pope Francis from St. Peter's Square used the colonnade as a symbol of embrace to all of humanity, with the voyage of this satellite, we wish to prolong that embrace, said Monsignor Lucio Adrian Ruiz, the secretary of the Vatican Communication Department, during a press conference in March. The highlights of that historic moment were written down in a book titled, Why Are You Afraid? Have You No Faith? Which was converted into a nanotechnological version, a silicon plate measuring 0.08 square inches by 0.008 inches wide by Italy's National Research Council. For those of us who are used to seeing space as the privileged place from which to observe the world and communicate to it without borders, it was easy to imagine a quick, humble, and effective solution to offer wings to the Holy Father's message, Giorgio Saccoccia said, president of the Italian Space Agency. The satellite, built by the Polytechnic University of Turin and operated by the Italian Space Agency, weighs less than 6 pounds. It contains the Pope's message on March 27, 2020, and the names of all those who collaborated and supported the project. During its orbit, the satellite will transmit small messages of hope by Catholic popes to signify the continuity that the Church's message has had throughout history. The logo of the mission pulls together the symbols of Christ, the Virgin Mary, the Holy Trinity, and the Pope, orbiting around a stylized version of the Earth made with the Holy See's initials. It was created by the students of the Salesian University Institute in Venice. In 2022, the Pope's message was also memorialized in the Svalbard Seed Vault, a depository in the Arctic that contains more than 1 million seed samples from all over the world to ensure their survival. It was registered as a seed of hope. The project was coordinated by the Vatican's Dicastery of Communication with the help of other Catholic institutions. People could acquire a virtual boarding pass aboard the satellite by signing up on the Space Satellite's website and committing to making a gesture of mercy for peace and hope. "We are all in the same storm," Paolo Ruffini, head of the Vatican Dicastery of Communication, said, describing modern struggles ranging from the pandemic to the conflict in Ukraine. "We need to look beyond. We need to look up. We need to look from above. And we must look deep, deep within us because, as the Pope said, speaking to God, this is not a time for your judgment, but for our judgment," he added. Now from National Public Radio's All Things Considered, a transcript entitled "Miracle Exhumed Nun Draws Pilgrims to Rural Missouri" by Frank Morris. Mary Louise Kelly, host. Pilgrims are flocking to a monastery in rural Missouri to witness what some see as a miracle. The body of Sister Wilhelmina Lancaster is well preserved 4 years after she died and was buried in a simple wooden coffin. Some consider her a candidate for sainthood because of her incorrupt body. Some also point to the racism Lancaster overcame as a black nun in America. Frank Morris of member station KCUR reports. Frank Morris. The Benedictine Sisters of Mary, Queen of the Apostles Monastery, is out on a muddy gravel road in the green rolling countryside of northeast Missouri. Mary Nabel drove 10 hours from Cordion, Indiana, to see the remains of Sister Wilhelmina Lancaster. Mary Nabel, "It's a miracle. It is. She looks amazing. I am just nearly moved to tears." Morris, "The body lies behind glass now, dressed in traditional black habit. Sister Wilhelmina's face looks much as it did in life, though her hands are withered. Jamie Nicholas flew in from Chicago." Jamie Nicholas, "She looks pretty darn good. I hope I look that good alive." Morris, "When Sister Wilhelmina died at 95, nuns buried her in the monastery grounds in a plain wooden coffin. They didn't embalm her. Sister Wilhelmina founded this highly orthodox order of nuns, and following tradition, the nuns wanted to enshrine her remains in their chapel. They dug up the casket in late April expecting bones, but when they opened it, they saw a familiar face." Majoli Callan, visiting from Osceola, Missouri, says that is a clear sign. Majoli Callan, "Of sainthood. I mean, the body is organic. It decays. 4 years underground, rain, snow, sun, you name it." Morris, "It takes years, sometimes centuries, to reach official sainthood in the Catholic Church. And there are lots of factors to consider. But 17-year-old Sunshine Lee, visiting from Springfield, Missouri, says having an incorrupt body is a good start." Sunshine Lee, "It's one of the most venerated parts of being Catholic. To be considered incorruptible means that you're not only a holy person, but also strong enough and within your own faith to be incorruptible from, like, the elements, supposedly." Morris, "Religious pilgrims aren't the only ones impressed. A few miles away in tiny Gower, Missouri, Jack Klein, the undertaker, the one who placed Sister Wilhelmina's body in the coffin, says it looks better 4 years after death than many do after 3 days. Jack Klein, "I was kind of shocked, you know. I mean, because I've picked up loved ones of people that have laid for a couple of days. They found them, you know. And you really can't even get close to them. I mean, for the odor and the decomposition starting and everything like that." Morris, "The nuns left the remains out in the open for a month before placing them in a permanent shrine. The biggest shock for Klein, there was no odor. But not everyone sees something inexplicable." Nick Pasalacuella, "I just didn't find it that surprising." Morris, Nick Pasalacuella, a forensic anthropologist at Western Carolina University, studies the way human bodies decompose in nature, and that's well documented. But he says there isn't much data on what happens after burial, factoring in all the variations in temperature, moisture, soil type, and coffins. Pasalacuella, we just don't have a good understanding of how bodies decompose when they're buried in those settings. Morris, even if there is a scientific explanation, there's still a good case for sainthood for the woman who started this thriving monastery, according to Dan Stockman, national correspondent for Global Sisters Report. Dan Stockman, she was the foundress and absolutely beloved by the community. And I think you can't avoid the racial aspect here. Morris, Sister Wilhelmina was black. She became a nun in 1941, stuck with it. Stockman says that says a lot. Stockman, the Catholic Church in the United States does not have a great track record on race. You know, you had stories of sisters who applauded when Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, right? Just black sisters and white orders who were treated just unbelievably bad, and yet they stayed. They kept the faith. Morris, back at the monastery, visitors say Sister Wilhelmina has renewed their faith. Pam Davis and her daughter, both in for the day from Asheville, North Carolina, linger on the monastery grounds at a hole where Sister Wilhelmina was buried. Pam Davis, you see, there's spoons in there. People are, you know, taking a little bit of dirt away with them because they want to take that miracle with them, right? What part of this can I take home? Can I take with me? Morris, are you going to take some dirt home? Davis, of course. Morris, Davis says she's a systems analyst for a global tech company, not someone given to whimsy. But like others here, she's open to the possibility that Sister Wilhelmina Lancaster represents something beyond the scope of science and reason. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.